Welcome to The State of Energy. I'm Rand DeWitt, along with the man that Cupid calls for clothing advice.
Wow.
Tom Clark, Executive Director of Rocky Mountain Propane Association. I've just got a visual right now of Tom as Cupid.
And I just forgot that your birthday is also on Valentine's Day.
It's the day before. I was born on Friday
the
13th.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Friday the 13th.
I really screwed that
1 o'clock in the afternoon, 13th hour, 13th day. The moon was full. And now you have Rand. So, folks, thank you very much for joining us. Go to thestateofenergy.com. You can find out all kinds of great information about how propane can improve your life, where you can get propane near you, where you can listen to the past shows. We're going into, season 5 now? Has it been going on 5 years?
Yeah, this is season 5 right here. So I wonder how long we get to run, because all great things eventually come to an end.
Really?
Don't they?
I don't know.
What do you think? We get 10 seasons out of this?
You know, I mean, Rick and Morty got 10, so I think we can hit that. Right? Yeah, they got 10 seasons.
Okay.
Also, join us on Instagram at The State of Energy. Once again, at The State of Energy on Instagram. Join us there. And Tom, we've got an amazing guest coming up in just a couple of moments. Just want to touch on a few items here that are important to our audience. Because we've been talking a lot about how great the propane industry is to work in and how many billions of dollars the industry is going to grow over the next 5-6 years. And we are in need of a qualified traveling propane instructor.
That's right. Yeah. So the Rocky Mountain Propane Association, in working with the Colorado Propane Association, is looking for a traveling trainer that can go around all 5 of these states and give industry training that the training's already been developed. We just need somebody to present this to the industry and help with different code compliance, train employees on safe work practices and the basic propane training courses that we provide. And then we also are looking for somebody that can the same person that could also do some fire training, because our last show we were down at the Utah Fire Training Academy, right?
Yes, Fire Marshal Boyd.
Yeah. So and we go around and train fire departments, mostly volunteer departments that have limited access to training and money. So we do this for free for them. And we're looking for somebody that can get out there and hustle and loves to travel and loves to meet people and can present to people. So that's what we're looking for. It's a really well-paying job. It's got some good benefits to it. And we're going to post that here today. So hopefully we get somebody. We're looking to hire somebody within the next 30 days. I know that might be pretty hard because it's hard to hire people.
Well, I mean, people want to make decisions. People want to make changes. New year, and they want to make changes. Make it happen.
Yeah.
And are we going to have it on thestateofenergy.com and lpgasjobs.com?
And Indeed.
And Indeed.
Yeah. And you don't have to be a propane expert to do this. If you had background in training or education and you want to get out and travel these 5 states and meet people, we have the curriculum already done, and it's accredited. It's really a great program. We just need somebody to get out there and present it.
All right. So check it out. We'll have that up later today at thestateofenergy.com and also lpgasjobs.com. And Tom, we are going to bring in our great guest right now, Mr. Steve Gorham. Welcome to the State of Energy.
Hi, guys. Great to join you today.
And let's give a rundown on Steve. He's the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America and author of 4 books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development with over 100,000 copies in print. And Steve's latest book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure, just came out a couple of months ago in August. And Steve, where's a good place for people to buy this book and your other books?
Well, they can go to my website, stevegoreham.com, G-O-R-E-H-A-M. They're also available on Amazon, of course, and there are ebooks as well. If they do go to my website, though, I'll send them a signed copy.
Oh, right on. Okay.
Nice.
You have to send one to the State of Energy, addressed to Tom and Rand as well, talking about the great time you had on our podcast. And you, people will recognize you if they go to your website. You're on radio, you're on TV, you're on podcasts that have been heard in over 60 countries around the world. much like the state of energy. And you've been on with Dennis Miller, Sean Hannity, Fox Business Channel. You're a very well-rounded man.
Well, they do let me come on sometimes and make some comments, so I do appreciate that.
And we're going to get Steve to come to our meeting in August up in Kalispell, Montana, and you're going to give some presentation up there. But what I was so excited to have you on our podcast is you're so well-versed in energy and climate change, net zero stuff, even in renewables. And this is kind of our focus on this whole show. We talk about all these things, and it's really nice to get somebody that's engaged in this stuff every single day, kind of your perspective on where we're at in the United States with our energy. We see the news every single day of something about LNG getting the second hand over here, saying you're not going to be able to ship this, no more exports.
The administration just freezed licensing on liquefied natural gas.
We did.
So we're trying to, we would love to hear your insight on where we're at as a whole in the country with energy, just kind of a broad overview. And then we want to pick your brain about some electric vehicles and renewable gas.
Sure, that's great. Well, we are in a golden age of low-cost, abundant energy today. Global energy consumption is up by 30 times since 1800. And still today, about 80% of our energy comes from hydrocarbons, which are coal, oil, and natural gas. But we are in a little bit of an energy battle nowadays across the world. We have a number of people that say, we need to force a transition to renewable energy and try and get to a thing called net zero by 2050. And this is primarily the wealthy nations of the world that are pushing this, the United States, Europe, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and some others all want us to get rid of our hydrocarbon fuels, try and eliminate carbon dioxide emissions, capture carbon dioxide by 2050. But this is really beyond a reach-out goal. This is an impossibility. It isn't going to happen. And as my new book talks about green breakdown, this whole drive for an energy transition is going to break down along the way. So we're kind of in this situation. And I go and talk to groups, propane groups and others, about energy and about what I think the proper situation is. We just have to kind of ride this through until we get back to a more common sense path on energy.
What happens if we keep pushing this, though? We keep shutting down all of this production and even shut down coal-powered plants. I just feel like our energy costs are just going to go sky high. When you shut down the production of it, you still have the demand that's increasing every year, but our supply gets shut off. I just feel like it's going to affect everybody and even hit the poorer population even harder.
Well, that's right. Global energy consumption has increased about 45% since the year 2000. The International Energy Agency and some others say we need to get it to decline by 8% by 2050. This is really not going to happen. We have not only do the wealthy nations rely on hydrocarbon energy, but around the world we have many, many nations that are trying to grow and build their economies. We have today, for example, we have about 700 million people that don't have access to electricity. There are literally 100 hospitals or more, hundreds of hospitals that don't have electricity, if you can imagine that, in the poor part of the world. We have about 2 billion people that have blackouts or brownouts every day or every other day. And yet we have people that say, well, we need to get rid of coal, which produces 35% of the world's electricity. We also have, if you look at vehicles, 91% of the world's vehicle fuel comes from petroleum, and another 4% comes from gas. And that's natural gas and also propane and propane buses, for example. There's about 4% that comes from biofuels and about 1% that comes from electric. So we continue to be dominated by hydrocarbons for electricity and also for transportation. And that is going to continue for many, many decades to come.
Wow, that's you said 700 million people don't have access to electricity.
That's correct.
That's double. That's double the amount of people in the U.S. So you imagine everybody you saw in going down the road, one more of those didn't have access to electricity. That just seems un that it seems unimaginable.
If you have an air conditioner in the United States, and most of us do, that air conditioner by itself uses more electricity than the third of the world's people get to use on a daily basis. So there
Wow.
really is tremendous need for low-cost, reliable energy across the world. And because of the fear of man-made global warming that are trying to get us to make a very, very costly transition.
I was asking Rand earlier today what he thought a life without oil and gas would look like. You're
Let's go back about 3,000 years.
I mean, you just look around you. Every single thing that you touch has some type of oil and gas that helped produce that. And as we slowly remove all those things or the production of that, it's just going to drive us into a spot where we can't afford anything anymore.
Now, there's kind of a disconnection from reality. No doubt, Fatih Birol, the executive director of the International Energy Agency, has said, if we want, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the quote in front of me right now, but if we're concerned about climate change, we have to stop using hydrocarbons today. We can't use them anymore. And the guy's there, he's standing there in a suit making that statement. He's got a smartphone, I'm sure, which uses plastic from hydrocarbons. He's got a suit on and shirt that have come from synthetics, from chemicals, from hydrocarbons. He's got shoes on, same thing. But everything that we use, whether it's medicines or medical supplies or all of our transportation, all of our heavy equipment, all of the plastic that is in all our stores. And oh, by the way, about half of the world's food is produced using synthetic nitrogen that comes from natural gas or coal, that produces it. And then our tractors, of course, are all using diesel fuel. So the statements are just phenomenal, and they've kind of lost touch with reality.
It seems like there's a big push for all this renewable products, and even propane has gotten into the renewables. And there's a lot of publicity or bad press that says the propane industry is trying to greenwash propane. And we've talked about greenwashing on our show before, and it's where companies start to change their colors to green, and they start to talk about their environmental impacts. And they're just trying to make everybody have this warm and fuzzy that they're going green. But propane really, really has some renewable products made from many different sources. The big one, I think, would be from camelina. But what's your take on renewables, and what are we really doing? Is this just to make everybody feel good, or is it really sustainable?
Well, renewables, I really don't like the phrase. By the way, I think the state of California is now suing companies that are claiming that their gas is renewable or their products for false advertising. So you have to be a little careful doing that. But the whole renewable idea is kind of flawed. The idea that something is renewable or not renewable. We have centuries and centuries of hydrocarbon fuels remaining. So the idea whether they're renewable or not really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. We're not running out of any of those fuels, but it is a tool of the folks that want to make an energy transition. But the real thing we ought to be focusing as on pollution, real pollution, and not carbon dioxide, as I can talk about. An example is my grandfather had a coal furnace in his basement in the 1950s. And most of the people in Chicago did. And after it would snow, within about 4 or 5 days, there would be a black film on top of all the snow from the coal dust. And the young folks who might be listening probably don't know what spring cleaning was for. Literally, people in Chicago would wash down the inside of their walls every spring to reduce the coal dust.
Rand's probably done that before.
Yeah.
He's from Maine.
Yeah, northern Maine. Yeah, we did a lot of things to keep warm.
But now our air is very much cleaner, and it's largely because of natural gas and propane. If you put natural gas or propane into a house that is has either a coal furnace or is burning wood, you reduce particulates by a factor of 1,000. And so sometimes I ask audiences when I present which energy source has done the most to reduce pollution globally, and it's not wind and it's not solar. It is natural gas and propane. It's gaseous fuels.
Well, that's got to be why we're exporting so much natural gas around the world. Can you imagine what kind of impact that's having to cleaning up the emissions from doing exactly what you're talking about, getting rid of some of those other dirtier products, and people are using liquefied natural gas, and we're exporting this to the countries that are needing it the most to get rid of their other dirtier products. So why in the world would we stop that if we're trying to promote this worldwide?
Absolutely right. Just 3 years ago, I think it was the, I don't know if it was the World Bank or who, but one big international organization pointed out, probably United Nations, that we've now passed a little bit of a marker. And in the poor nations of the world, they're now using more gas for fuel than biomass. People have been traditionally using wood or dung or charcoal to heat and to cook within buildings. And of course, that causes all kinds of lung disease problems. In some places, the amount of particulates are 200 times as high as in the United States, for example, indoors.
Rand was going to try dung once. Did you say you had a bull mastiff or something? You were going to try to see if how well that cooks?
Yeah, I was gonna go with that. Actually, I've got a 5-pound long-haired Chihuahua.
Just that's actually a reality. Like, there's actually millions. I think it was even in the billions of people that were using dung to cook and heat water.
Yeah,
because they don't need heat for their
billion.
A couple billion. They don't need it for their heat because they live in climates that are warm. But they need it for hot water and cooking food. That just blows me away. Like I just can't even imagine. Go out in the field and grab yourself some dung, bring that back in so we can cook.
Now, probably the biggest example is propane. Liquid petroleum gas is being exported. About 2/3 of the propane that we produce in the United States is now being exported. By the way, that production has tripled since the year 2000.
Yeah.
And we're shipping it to Asia. We're shipping it to places like China and India. Matter of fact, Prime Minister Modi in India has had a program going for about the last 8 years. He set up a whole bunch of distribution centers to provide canisters of liquid petroleum gas to homes. And so he's aiming at 50 million homes that have not had access to natural fuels for gas. And so they're distributing these canisters. So that's another very, very good story about how natural gas is helping to clean up the environment and reduce pollution around the world.
You're listening to The State of Energy. I'm Rand DeWitt, along with Tom Clark, Executive Director of Rocky Mountain Propane Association. Go to thestateofenergy.com to find out how propane can improve your life. And we've got an amazing guest today that just by showing up has improved the IQ by 5 times on The State of Energy. Steve Gorham, Executive Director with the Climate Science Coalition of America, author of some great books, including his new one, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. You can get that on his website, along with a signed copy by going to stevegorham.com. That is stevegorham.com. And Steve, what are your thoughts? I mean, and just so everyone knows, we have to say this a lot. We're not anti-electric. We're not anti-water, hydro, solar. We just think that we're moving way too fast, and it doesn't make sense. And we often say on this show, follow the money, and that'll answer why we're having our pudding before we can eat our meat. But energy security is big. Because recently, just a couple of days ago, the FBI director, Christopher Wray, went before the House Select Committee on Chinese Communist Party in saying that Chinese hackers are getting ready to attack the American infrastructure, water, electrical grids, oil, natural gas pipelines, transportation systems. What do you see happening, and how concerned right now should we be about this?
We do have some problems with just our grid, the stability of our grid. That's one of the things I talk about in Green Breakdown. One of the four big problems we're going to have with the coming Green Breakdown is electricity blackouts. Let me read you a quote by Federal Energy Regulatory Commissioner Mark C. Christie. He spoke in front of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee last June, and he said, quote, "I think we are headed for very dire consequences, potentially catastrophic consequences in the United States in terms of the reliability of our grid." And he went on to say that we're closing our traditional coal plants and in some cases natural gas plants too fast, and those are the things that keep the lights on. And indeed, we have seen some blackouts recently in 2021 in California. They had a bunch of rolling blackouts. California has closed all the coal plants, all of the nuclear plants except one, and they've reduced their supply of natural gas. And in August, they get about 20% of their electricity from solar until the sun goes down about 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. And then if anything else in the system fails, they have to institute rolling blackouts to keep the system from crashing. In February of 2021, Texas had lethal blackouts in the very cold weather. Yeah. The electricity was off for almost three days, actually, for 4.5 million people.
And propane came to the rescue.
Well, where they had it.
It's what it always seems to be. It's like everything, they just try to go green. They try to go solar. They try to do wind. And when all that breaks down, it's the propane to the rescue. And it's like, why don't we work more with this?
Those windmills were just frozen solid, and there was a lines of people waiting to get their propane. And this all comes back to this energy security. If you have propane at your house, your business, your farm, and you have a on-site storage where you can order it whenever you want, you can shop around, you could have multiple tanks if you wanted to. That energy security could last you anywhere from a week to months and months, or even years if that's what you wanted. And that's what I think is so great about the propane industry, is that energy security, that off-grid security that we might need soon.
Yeah, I think you're right. Propane is very, very secure in that regard because you can store it on site. Coal is similar for power plants. They heap up big piles of coal. They store it on site. They can burn it if there are any problems or very cold weather. Natural gas, a little bit of a problem. I know some people have called it just-in-time electricity.
Yeah.
Because we don't have quite as much storage, and you're really counting on what's coming in the pipelines. But the worst, of course, is wind and solar. And in Texas, during those blackouts, a lot of people had electric appliances. They had heat pumps, and those things just were not there when the electricity went off.
The good old heat pump. The heat pump is a disaster. It actually uses more electricity.
Yep.
It actually has like a little toaster oven inside of the furnace that kicks on when the heat pump gets below a certain temperature outside, because it can't produce. It actually uses more electricity than if you were just to use than a gas appliance. Your energy consumption is higher than if you were just to leave your furnace there. And it's crazy that we're trying to take those things away from people.
It's good for Pop-Tarts, I'm just saying. Those are always good. Steve Gorham, we just want to thank you very much for joining us on the State of Energy. And just in our closing minute, if you had any closing thoughts you can share with us, thank you for sharing your wealth of knowledge.
Well, I do think that people need to push back a little bit against this energy transition. I would advise they read my books, and if they're putting up a solar field near their home or a wind field, they need to be involved, find out if that's the right thing for their area. They need to be concerned if they've got a gasoline car, if they've got gas stoves, And they need to know what many of our political leaders have in store for them. And we need to push back. Otherwise, we are going to have higher prices, blackouts, and other problems coming with our energy systems.
Steve Gorham, thank you very, very much once again for being on the State of Energy with us.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much. And we'll see you in August.
Thanks.
And once again, folks, go to stevegorham.com, get his new book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. If you order it through his website, he'll autograph it for you. Once again, stevegorham.com. That is Tom Clark.